This Fronteras podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest.
Build that wall! Build that wall! Build that wall! Build that wall!
Walls work. Just ask Israel.
You look at San Antonio, you look at so many different places. They go from one of the most unsafe cities in the country to one of the safest cities immediately.
The border city of El Paso, Texas, used to have extremely high rates of violent crime, one of the highest in the entire country, and considered one of our nation's most dangerous cities. Now, immediately upon its building, with a powerful barrier in place, El Paso is one of the safest cities in our country.
President Trump says walls work. They stop crime. They stop drugs. They stop human trafficking. He's painted the border as lawless and dangerous. But Texans who live on the border disagree with that assessment. Crime statistics have shown that crime in border communities is actually lower than in the rest of the U.S. No matter the arguments, 14 miles of border barrier is being built this month in Hidalgo County in the Texas Rio Grande Valley. And another 8 to 12 mile stretch of wall is planned this fall in neighboring Starr County, cutting through 162 tracts of private land there. Not only is the planned barrier causing concerns over eminent domain, but the border wall could upset or destroy the ecology and biodiversity of the Rio Grande Valley. There's another concern, though. Melissa del Bosque is a reporter with ProPublica and is a Lannan Fellow with Type Investigations. On November 7th, she published the article, "The Border Wall Could Cause Deadly Flooding. Officials Plan to Build It Anyway." Del Bosque's investigations took her to Starr County to explore how a barrier would affect communities on both sides of the border. But first, she had to look back to a 2008 Arizona storm that spurred concerns over the link between fencing and floods.
Back in the summer of 2008, and this is just a few months after they had completed a few segments of border wall in Nogales, Arizona, in between the two sister cities of Nogales, Sonora in Mexico, and Nogales, Arizona. And, you know, they typically have these monsoon rains that can be these very heavy rains that come and go fairly quickly. And so they had a typical, you know, monsoon rain. But what happened after the rain fell really surprised everybody. On the Mexican side, the downtown streets were inundated and flooded with several feet of water. Sinkholes opened, and the military had to come in and rescue people from the floodwaters. And on the U.S. side, the flooding was significant as well, but not nearly as bad. So everybody wondered in those communities, why was the flooding so terrible this time after years and years of these types of rain events? And what the engineers there were able to conclude was that it was because of the border wall construction that had exacerbated the flooding. And what had happened is the wall had kind of acted like a dam and held all of the water on the Mexican side of the fence. And that's why they had several feet of floodwaters in the downtown streets on the Mexican side. So we started seeing these events of the wall construction exacerbating flooding in different areas. Like Arizona, it's also happened in New Mexico as well, in Columbus, New Mexico. And now what they're wanting to do is build a few segments of border wall in Starr County in South Texas, which is also in a floodplain, and which will exacerbate the flooding there.
And we also need to point out that this concrete barrier, it was a solid concrete barrier. There's no way for the water to flow. And I think maybe a lot of people aren't necessarily familiar with border fencing across the U.S.-Mexico border. It varies depending on the contractor, right? You're going to find areas that are concrete barriers. You're going to find areas that are these bollard fencing areas that we're starting to hear more and more of now. But the bollard fencing with the long slatted pillars, that necessarily isn't going to solve any flooding issues either, right?
Right. Well, in Nogales, they have a couple different kinds of fencing, right? Because I think they also have the bollard fencing too. And what that looks like is you have a concrete base, and then you have 15 or 18 feet tall giant steel posts. And now they're putting these anti-climb plates on top of them too, which makes it a few feet even taller. So it's solid steel on top and then these big steel fence posts. And what's happening with that type of bollard wall, which is really mostly what they have in South Texas and what they plan on building, is that it just clogs up with debris. You know, if it's built in a floodplain, and in South Texas, it's very subtropical. There's a lot of vegetation. There's also a lot of trash that gets swept down the river. So that all accumulates in the fence. It makes a solid barrier, so it acts like a dam. So the water just builds up against it. And then all that flood water then backs up into the communities instead of dispersing.
So let's talk a little bit about the International Boundary and Water Commission, the IBWC. It has sections in both the United States and Mexico. And I know in El Paso, where I'm from, they kind of regulate who gets water and who gets how much water. But I understand that the IBWC had previously said that it couldn't agree on a border wall construction in parts of South Texas. But why did it change its mind in 2011? What changed?
That is the big question, right? I mean, the IBWC, the International Boundary and Water Commission, is a pretty fascinating binational commission, actually. It's been around for 129 years. And they've done a pretty good job of managing the water, you know, and the treaties between the two countries. But the construction of the border wall has really driven a wedge between the two sides of the IBWC. And there's an office in Ciudad Juarez and an office in El Paso. And then they have smaller satellite offices up and down the border. So pretty much from the beginning of border wall construction, which, you know, started around 2008, Mexico has been against it. There's a binational treaty that was signed that states neither country can build structures in the floodplain without the agreement of both countries, which sounds like a common sense thing, you know, because if you build something in the floodplain, it's going to affect the communities on either side of the river. It's going to push water into either the U.S. side or the Mexican side. So they both have to be in agreement. So from the beginning of the border wall construction, Mexico said, you know, we don't agree that you can build a wall in a floodplain and it's not going to have an effect on the communities there. And so there's been this back and forth between the U.S. side and the Mexican side. And there have been dueling hydrologic reports made, flooding reports made about the type of impact that the fence or the wall is going to have. So Mexico has found that it will have an impact and it will violate the treaty, whereas the U.S. says it won't. So what the U.S. has done has commissioned a series of reports, flood reports, to be done by Michael Baker International, which is a big engineering company. The first reports that they did found that there would be an impact on flooding and that it would push flood water into Mexico. But then in 2011, they had a new engineer do a report, and he used different data, and he used a different type of modeling that other engineers have told me they don't agree with, and that's in the story where I get into the weeds with another engineer who looked at the data and does not agree with the data that they use. I mean, basically what he said is that you can put any kind of data into a report and come up with the result that you want, which is kind of looks like is what they did. So this report in 2011 came back saying that, you know, building a structure, building a wall in a floodplain was not going to have any impact wasn't going to push floodwaters into Mexico, and therefore it wasn't going to violate the treaty. So the U.S. side of the IBWC signed off on it, which was what CBP, you know, Customs and Border Protection, the agency in charge of constructing the wall, had been pushing and pushing and pushing for this. So they finally got the IBWC, the U.S. side, to sign off on it. But the Mexican side did not agree and would not sign off on it and has been very much against it and to this day has not agreed to it. And then they've done their own reports and found that it will have an impact on cities in Mexico. So right now they're just at an impasse and the U.S. is working unilaterally just to build in the floodplain without Mexico's agreement.
So you've been mentioning this treaty. What happens if it's found that this treaty is being violated?
Well, that is a good question, right? Because in the past, when treaties have been violated, Mexico has really sort of taken a passive response. They have NAFTA, which was just renegotiated, and they have all of these other things that are wrapped up with the United States, economic considerations and so forth. So right now, it's just manifested itself in, you know, letters of complaint, diplomatic letters protesting the results back and forth between the two agencies. But it hasn't gone beyond that. You know, Mexico has a new president who just took office in December, so he hasn't been in office that long. You know, we'll see how far this elevates, if it will go to an international court to be adjudicated or exactly what Mexico would do. We're not really sure.
And again, you've mentioned that Mexico will be profoundly impacted if a wall is built due to flooding, because if people can picture the Rio Grande, the wall is always going to be built on the U.S. side. So this border wall is not built exactly on the lines of the U.S.-Mexico border. It's built on the U.S. side of the border with several dozens of feet between that wall and the river, the actual demarcation that separates the two countries. And that river is always going to be on the so-called Mexican side of the wall. And so whenever there's going to be flooding, it's going to happen on that side of the wall, and it is going to impact profoundly those Mexican communities.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Starr County, and it's just west of McAllen and much more populated areas, is that it doesn't have a levee. It doesn't have a river levee. And the communities are very, very old communities that have been there for hundreds of years. They're right up against the river. And all there is just sandy riverbanks. It erodes quite a lot there. So it's a very difficult place to build any kind of structure, especially, you know, a big concrete and steel wall. It's just a terrible idea, actually. But what I have seen in documents is they could start as early as September on construction there.
We're talking with Melissa Del Bosque, reporter with ProPublica and a Lannan Fellow with Type Investigations. Her article on flooding associated with a border wall can be found at typeinvestigations.org and on texasmonthly.com. Coming up, a border wall won't just devastate the environment, it will also destroy historic burial sites.
And these are very interesting historical sites that are important to African American history and border history.
More with Melissa Del Bosque next on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Welcome back to Fronteras.
There's a lot of, like, fear around it, kind of justification for things that when I get down here I see are not actually happening and that there's not really a need for a wall. We're just hearing such a different story up north.
They haven't consulted with us because we're the original people of this land. We have the inherent right to this land.
Those are sounds from a border wall protest in Mission earlier this month. A border wall is being constructed in Hidalgo County this month, and another wall is expected to go up this fall in neighboring Starr County. Supporters of a wall say it'll stop drugs, trafficking, and violent crime, but critics of a wall say a barrier won't make their communities safer. They're already safe. Crime statistics back up those claims. They also say the wall would be an environmental disaster and even destroy historic cemeteries. Melissa del Bosque, a reporter with ProPublica and a Lannan fellow with Type Investigations, says border communities don't want to be lawless. They support border security.
I think what they're most concerned about when I talk to people locally is the opaqueness of the government's plans for building there. They're not sure what the government has in mind, and they're concerned about the flooding issue. Another impact that really hasn't been studied is all the drainage from these towns goes south into the river. You know, if they have a heavy rain event and a bunch of, you know, vegetation or garbage or whatever gets swept down the streets into the river, it's all that's going to back up against the fence, and it's going to create this solid barrier, and then all that rainwater is going to back up into the American towns. So they could also get flooding as well, because they have a lot of arroyos and things like that that go right into the river. And also, you know, their land is being condemned through eminent domain and taken from them, because a lot of people do not want to give up their land to build this wall. So people are just very uncertain and kind of just, you know, waiting to see what happens.
It's not just an issue of private land ownership, but also tribal lands. And one other instance that you wrote about in an article in January was historic grave sites. Can you tell us how a border wall in South Texas could affect some of the historic grave sites in Texas?
Yeah, and this is another thing that people don't really understand about constructing a border wall, is that the Real ID Act in 2005, you know, Congress gave the Department of Homeland Security unilateral authority to waive federal laws that would impede the construction of the wall. They made it a national security issue. You know, the normal process that you would go through to build a road or a highway or anything like that, you know, there would be public hearings, there would be federal laws that would come into play, like the Antiquities Act, the Historic Preservation Act. There would be archaeologists and people out there looking to see if there's Native American grave sites and other things like that before they did the digging. So under the Real ID Act, they can waive all of those laws. And so DHS can just go in and start building, which is what communities are very concerned about, because there has been no public meetings. And the cemetery that I write about, one of them, is the Jackson Ranch Cemetery, the Eli Jackson Cemetery. And these are very interesting historical sites that are important to African-American history and border history. These were outposts on the Underground Railroad that have just recently been chronicled and studied by local scholars in the border. These were families who came from the South fleeing the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 on their way to Mexico, because Mexico outlawed slavery decades before the United States did. So a lot of African Americans fled slavery and started new lives in Mexico, but many of them also stayed along the Texas border, because all they had to do was cross the river to freedom in Mexico, but they could still stay in the United States. So these communities sprang up along the Texas border, emancipated slaves and fugitive slaves who married into local Mexican families, Tejano families. So you have this very interesting history of Latino, African American, Native American families all living together on these ranches. So there's quite an extensive family, the Jackson family and others, who are trying to preserve this history and these burial sites and these historic ranching cemeteries that have been there for, you know, 150 years. But they've had no communication whatsoever with the Department of Homeland Security about what they have in mind. And they're supposed to start building soon. Are they going to exhume the bodies? Are they going to build right over them? I found an instance 10 years ago when they built some border wall segments in Brownsville that they bulldozed right over a small family burial site, because they didn't know it was there. And then they were told, and it was already too late. So they built the wall on top of these burial sites.
You wrote in your article last month that there are already cemeteries that are split by a border wall. Like you had mentioned before, they've been bulldozed over, and there are remains now on the Mexican side of the wall and others on the U.S. side of the wall. Is there anything being done to possibly go to the other side of the wall and maybe reinter some of those remains?
you know, that could be a possibility. I think what has happened, like I write about the Santa Rosalia Cemetery in Brownsville, which is south of the wall, and that was built, you know, about a decade ago. And I guess what a lot of people don't understand is that the wall, and you were mentioning this earlier, is usually built about a half a mile or even a mile from the actual river and the international boundary with Mexico. So there's a good amount of U.S. land there south of the wall. And so some of these old ranching cemeteries have wound up there in this sort of no man's land south of the wall, which is the case with Santa Rosalia. And with them, some people are afraid to go through the gap in the wall because there's a gap there right now where there's a road that leads to the cemetery. But they're now installing a gate there. So there will be a touch pad with a code, a keypad, to open the gate. So they're unclear about, will the gate be open during the day so anybody could come and see their relatives? Or is it going to be locked and you're going to have a code that the Department of Homeland Security gives you? Nobody knows what's going to happen.
Melissa Del Bosque is a reporter with ProPublica and a Lannan Fellow with Type Investigations. In November, she wrote the article, "The Border Wall Could Cause Deadly Flooding. Officials Plan to Build It Anyway." And last month, Del Bosque penned the article, "Trump's Border Wall Would Destroy Historic Gravesites in Texas." Both can be found at typeinvestigations.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Ketz, and our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.